It's 12:06 and time for Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOY 89.1 FM. We'd love for you to join today's conversation by giving us a call at 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. Today's show is going to be focused on prostate cancer, the screening process, the diagnosis, and the treatment. And to introduce our guest today, I'm going to hand it over to my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman.
Thank you, Sarah. Prostate cancer is a major disease process in our society. It is the number two cause of cancer deaths in American men and the number one cause of cancer death in men over 75. One out of six, or 16% of American men, will be diagnosed at some point in their lives with prostate cancer, but only one in 36, or 3%, will actually die of prostate cancer. Most men do not die of this disease, and with the advances in recent years of screening, awareness, and therapy, we have many men with prostate cancer that survive with good qualities of life. To give us information on the causes, the diagnosis, and the screening of prostate cancer is Dr. Donald Urban, urologist with the Parkview Physicians Group. Welcome, Dr. Urban.
Thank you, Dr. Rothman. It's a pleasure to be here today.
And what are the causes and risk factors of prostate cancer? What is prostate cancer? What are the causes? And how is it diagnosed?
That's a good place to begin. Prostate cancer is an epithelial cancer, not unlike breast cancer. It occurs in the organ that has normal function, and it's an age-related change that happens as men age. And it's a malignancy that begins within the gland and then can spread beyond the gland, first into lymph nodes and lymphatic channels, blood vessels, to bone. It's a cancer that is usually silent until it's advanced, and it's only through screening that we can detect it early and give men an opportunity for treatment. Advanced stages of prostate cancer, stage 4 cancer, for example, doesn't have a curative treatment, so the strategy now with this cancer is for early detection. In terms of causes, the biggest risk factor is age. Age over 50 comes with a increasing risk with each decade. And as you've mentioned statistics already, a leading cause of death in men over age 75, age is the biggest risk factor. African-American race also appears to be a risk factor. We don't have a good understanding of why that is true, but there's a higher incidence of prostate cancer in African-American men and a higher incidence of death in African-American men. Beyond race, family history is a risk factor. And if you have a father or brother, a first-degree relative, in other words, your risk of prostate cancer doubles. And if you have two first-degree relatives with prostate cancer, it increases again. Family history is certainly an associated factor, and there is work now looking at genetic testing, which is not yet available, to figure that out. And then it appears that diabetes may be a risk factor, not just for prostate cancer, but for many cancers. There was a National Cancer Institute report that associated diabetes with many types of cancers, but certainly in my practice, I've seen a higher incidence of prostate cancer in diabetic men, and that sort of begs the nutritional aspect of prostate cancer, where it does appear that there are nutritional factors in the Oriental diet and the Mediterranean diet. There seems to be a lower incidence. The Western high-fat meat diet has a much higher incidence of cancer, and there are some associations with Vietnam veterans being exposed to Agent Orange, to farmers, to metal workers, those that work with heavy metal cadmium, and any types of brazing and welding as a lifelong occupation might have an increased risk of prostate cancer associated with those occupations.
And how do when should men start having their PSA, the prostate specific antigen, tested? And what has been the result since prostate specific antigen testing has begun in the early 1990s?
Right. Before 1990s, we really discovered prostate cancer when it became symptomatic. And it is a disease, for the most part, when it's symptomatic in elderly men. It's in that age group when it's a risk factor for death, 75 to 85, and men would have skeletal pain from bone metastasis or other urinary tract symptoms, difficulty with voiding. At that point, it was not curable, and it was only through the discovery of PSA as a screening blood test that we began a process of learning to detect cancer at an earlier stage in a man's life. And it's been evolutionary in terms of the recommendation, but the current recommendation is if you are African-American race, you should begin a PSA screening in the early 40s. If you have a family history of prostate cancer, especially in a first-degree relative who was affected by the disease before age 60, you should begin with an early PSA test in your 40s as a baseline number, and then begin with regular screening after that. For the rest of the general population, it's reasonable to expect that age 50 might be a reasonable age to start, but many are favoring an earlier baseline PSA because PSA is affected not only by prostate cancer development, but by the other age-related changes of the prostate that happens in men, which is benign prostate enlargement. And so getting that early baseline test helps you control for that other factor.
For some people that might be listening and thinking, I need to get myself this screening, what does that exactly entail? I know a lot of times we don't go to the doctors because we're afraid of the unknown. So walk us through what a male patient who needs to undergo the screening would kind of experience.
That's a very good question, Sarah. Before the screening activity with this blood test, cancer was detected only through physical examination, which for men is an awkward examination, one that not many men are often wanting to go see mm-hmm. the doctor about a rectal exam. And the rectal exam by itself doesn't really detect cancer early. The blood test, which is a simple blood test, can be done in the workplace, can be done at a health fair, can be done at your doctor's office. Excuse me. Is a simple test for men to get. It takes a few minutes to have a blood draw. And with that blood draw, we discover where they lie on the spectrum of normal versus abnormal blood test results.
Okay.
And there are normal age-related factors that can give you an elevated PSA. So when the prostate-specific antigen, which is a normal protein that the prostate secretes but is elevated in a variety of conditions, cancerous and non-cancerous, or elevated, what is your approach at that point? When patient has an elevated PSA, he sits down with his urologist and says, okay, where do we go from here?
Right. The most important part of what we provide as urologists is that clinical correlation of the blood test result, which is generally abnormal when a patient is referred to see us. We provide the correlation with symptoms that are related to age-related changes of enlarging prostate with symptom questionnaire. Sometimes there are evidence of inflammation or infection that can be detected by physical examination or by urinalysis. And it's fairly routine that we get a free and total fraction of PSA to determine. Use that as a adjunct to the total PSA, which is what we get when we go to the lab and the doctor. The free fraction tells us whether there's a higher risk of cancer or a lower risk of cancer. And that fraction is another blood test result. We also measure the prostate often by ultrasound to determine the prostate size. A larger prostate increases with aging because of benign enlargement, and the larger prostate can explain a higher PSA, and that calculation of PSA over size is called PSA density, and that helps us understand why the PSA may be elevated for reasons other than cancer. Ultimately, it's a patient-informed decision, medical decision-making, where the patient has to decide about going forward with the definitive test, determining whether cancer is present or not, which would be a biopsy. And in our discussion, along with examination and these other tests, we're also informing them of the option of having a prostate biopsy to determine whether or not they have early prostate cancer.
And the biopsy itself is really the only real way of defining, yes, this is cancer or not cancer. And you describe the biopsy and the pathology of it, and the pathologist looks at it, and then from that you put together a scoring system.
Right. In medicine, we're always wanting the definitive test. Medical oncologists, radiation oncologists, and surgeons won't do the next level of care without a biopsy. For prostate cancer, a biopsy is a needle that's inserted through the ultrasound probe that's within the rectum during the prostate ultrasound examination. It passes through the wall of the rectum into the prostate and removes a core of tissue. The core is 19 gauge in diameter and is about a half inch in length. And that core is collected in specimen containers. We generally take six specimens from each lobe, the right lobe and left lobe, and send those to the pathologist. The patient's instructed to rest that day. They've, prior to the procedure, have taken an antibiotic. They've taken a Fleet enema, and they rest at home and come back a week later for the biopsy result. And once we know that there's cancer, the pathologist will grade the cancer according to a grading system that began in the 1950s at Mayo Clinic with Dr. Gleason, who described the grades of cancer correlated with the behavior of cancer. And the Gleason grades and the Gleason scores that result from those grades will give us a prediction of the aggressiveness of the cancer. The higher grade cancers are those that we are most concerned about, with probably a shorter lead time to the cancer progression to metastatic disease. Generally, screening gives us about a 10 to 20 year lead time between screen detected cancer and clinical disease, and it's during that window of the lead time that we can provide a treatment that may provide a curative result for the patient.
I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Health 360 here on WBOI. Today we're focusing our conversation on prostate cancer, the process of diagnosing the cancer, the treatment, and the signs, symptoms, and warning signs. If you have a question, 260-452-1185 is the number to call. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. We're going to need to take a short break, but we'll be back with more of Health 360 in just a few moments.
Days after she performed at President Obama's second inaugural, Hydea Pendleton was murdered in Chicago, one of more than 40 homicides in the city this January. At her funeral, Father Michael Flager demanded a response.
We must interrupt the code of silence that is hiding people, killers in our own community.
I'm Neil Conan, Chicago's murder rate. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This afternoon at 2 p.m. here on WBOI.
You help pay for public education in Indiana, but from the Capitol to the classroom, the payback isn't always clear. You can find out how the state's policy impacts your family in our new State Impact Indiana project, a local national collaboration between Indiana public broadcasting stations and NPR. You can hear the stories during Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and Weekend Edition on NIPR, and dig deeper with a click on the State Impact logo at nipr.fm.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Cameron Memorial Community Hospital, providing health and wellness services in the spirit of charity, concern, and excellence, serving Steuben County and surrounding areas. Information at CameronMCH.com. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, working together with 15 local early childhood and youth-serving organizations to help kids in the community be prepared for learning in school and beyond. UWEducationNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Health 360 Midday Matters here on WBOI. The time is 12:21. Questions or comments? Give us a call at 260-452-1185. The phones are wide open. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio this afternoon with my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman, as well as Dr. Donald Urban, who is joining us to help facilitate this conversation on prostate cancer, the signs, treatment, diagnosis process of the cancer. And I wanted to take a step back for a moment and just ask, how are we doing in Northeast Indiana? Is there enough awareness of prostate cancer where people are actually going out and getting screenings? Is there room for improvement or growth?
I think there's always room for improvement in terms of men being proactive for their own health. I mean, that's really what's necessary. Men in general are about a decade behind women. Prostate cancer has lots of similarities to breast cancer in terms of the numbers of people at risk and the numbers diagnosed. In the country, there's about 260,000 new cases of prostate cancer, about 27,000 deaths. In Indiana, that translates into about 6,000 new cases per year and about 500 deaths per year. And so down at the Allen County level, we have our work to do, and we particularly want men who have risk factors to be aware of screening opportunities. Those would be African-American men and men with family history of prostate cancer. The age where you want to get tuned in is in your early 40s, and that's the age when many health screenings are beginning. Colon cancer, of course, I think more is about age 50, unless you have family history, but you're starting to screen for hypertension and cholesterol, and this can be incorporated either through your discussion with your family physician about screening and being proactive, or you could participate in health activities through work. Mm-hmm. And fairs, health fairs that are taking place.
We have a couple of callers on the line that I want to get to. Don, welcome to Health 360 Midday Matters.
Well, thank you.
You can go ahead with your question.
All right. I'm male, 53, and I was curious, as you get older, you pee differently. Is that typical or atypical? You know, you're not as strong, and the urine stream isn't as strong as when you were younger and all that goes with it.
Okay, that's a typical age-related change. I would say that for the most part, that's likely related to benign prostatic enlargement, but urinary symptoms could be associated with prostate cancer. Usually that, if it's associated with prostate cancer, would not be the earliest development of prostate cancer. It might be in a more intermediate stage, but the most typical patient in the early 50s with symptoms is not having symptoms due to prostate cancer. It's due to the other component of prostate change with age, which is the benign prostate hyperplasia. Mm-hmm.
But, of course, the only way to really know what's going on is to go to a doctor in person.
Right. The good news is that there are many things that we can do to help improve symptoms. And part of what we do sometimes without even prescribing a pill is providing patients with reassurance that everything's normal and get the necessary blood tests and have the clinical exam and make sure that, you know, you've checked that problem off the list of things you're concerned about at age 53.
Okay. And we have Leonard on line two. Leonard, welcome to Health 360.
Thank you. Doctor, there's been a great deal written disputing the value of the PSA. And yet you are very positive about it. Would you care to comment?
Well, we knew that question was coming. In fact, we were prepared to have a more in-depth discussion about it as we got further into the program. But your question sort of starts that discussion now. And certainly the PSA test is an imperfect screening test. You know, the ideal screening test is the test that's only positive when there's cancer and is negative when there's not cancer, and PSA is not one of those ideal screening tests. In fact, we don't have an ideal screening test for any cancer. So with every screening activity to detect an early cancer, there are shortfalls in terms of how it performs. And so for men, the problem of PSA has really come into this area because we can detect the disease at an early stage, but we don't know that all patients that have the disease really ought to be treated. And most men will die with their cancer and not from their cancer. And so the decision to screen has to be weighed not only by the patient, but also by the patient's physician, primary care doctor, or specialist in the instance of a urologist, putting in perspective your overall health and life expectancy and your family history, as well as your personal preference. Some patients will have had a close relative die of cancer and have a very strong preference that they do not want to have cancer death as one of their potential problems in the future. With prostate cancer, the only screening test we currently have available is a PSA blood test. We can do the clinical exam, we can do the blood test, we can do a biopsy, and those are our choices. So are we really going to abandon that as our only opportunity for men to have early detection of disease for a cancer that's the leading cause of death at age 75 and above? I think when I talk to cancer survivors, or particularly when I talk to a young man who presents with advanced disease, someone who walks in the door with a PSA of 1,000, who's going to die of his cancer within the next 5 years, he is angry that he didn't have an opportunity to be screened for a cancer that may have that kind of impact on his otherwise healthy life. So I certainly have a bias in favor of the blood test, but unfortunately we don't have a better option right now. We're working towards better options.
I have a question just to kind of play devil's advocate a little bit. What would be a logical reason for somebody not to want to get screened? I mean, you make a very good case about why you'd want to prevent this, but what is some of the reasoning that you wouldn't want to get screened possibly?
Well, the criticism that has come out of studies, there have been several studies within the United States that were not well done because of contamination, so to speak, of control subjects that mm-hmm. didn't really play the rules correctly. And so as a result, the differences between the study group and the control group were not as strong as some studies that have come out of Europe. But as a consequence of prostate cancer, men get treated for their localized disease with either radiation or surgery. Those are the leading causes, and both of those can have impact on quality of life. For surgical patients, which is really the area in which I have the most expertise, the impact can affect sexual function and can affect urinary control. And so the greatest risks for men being treated are that they might be treated for disease that's not going to impact their life expectancy. Ultimately, they might not die from their cancer, mm-hmm. yet after their treatment, they may have lifelong quality of life effects that they live with for the remainder of their life. On the other hand, if they're treated and successfully cured of a cancer that might have affected their life, then usually they can accept some of those effects, and we have treatments for all of the effects and side effects of these kinds of treatments.
Since prostate-specific antigen studies have been done in the United States since the early 90s, there's been a 40% decrease in the mortality, the death rates from prostate cancer, and the European studies have shown 20 to 30% plus decrease in mortality. And even more important, Dr. Urban, tell us about with the PSA screening, you're picking up more patients who would go into the metastatic,
right,
more severe form.
Right. If we just take a sidebar here for a moment and talk about the various stages of cancer in general, the screen detected stages are generally called the stage one, stage two cancers, and those that are locally advanced are stage three, and then the stage four cancer is the metastatic cancer. So since the onset of PSA in the early 1990s, we have seen a dramatic decrease in the incidence of the stage four cancer and the advanced stage cancers. And of course, these are cancers that patients possibly might not have died from, but they certainly might have suffered side effects in terms of their quality of life, if not their length of life. And we've seen a shift in the stages from the more advanced stages in the time frame prior to PSA screening to the earlier stages that are currently evidence of the screening benefit.
And one of the arguments against PSA screening is that there are an extreme number of men who are diagnosed with prostate cancer who have the indolent form that isn't really, it's localized, it's indolent, it's not going anywhere, but then a small amount will have the aggressive, life-threatening form. And this is the decision you and the patient obviously have to make. Where do we go from here? And this is where the art of medicine and the interaction with the patient makes a difference. So we're at that stage, and we want to prevent it going on. But I think the statistics are for stage one and two, almost 100% survival if treated. But as you get into stage four, about a 28% five-year survival. So this is really critical that we differentiate between these two groups.
Right, right. The early stage cancers are those that potentially are overtreated. And throughout my career, we've always discussed the opportunity of active surveillance with delayed treatment. In other words, a man goes all the way through the point of diagnosis, but then chooses to be observed and observed actively with ongoing clinical exams, ongoing blood test monitoring, and potentially future biopsies to monitor the disease status and delay a decision to proceed with treatment until there's some evidence that this disease is be taking on a more aggressive nature. So the grades that we talked earlier about, the lower grade cancers, the Gleason patterns that are six or less are considered the more favorable cancers. And when there's low disease burden, low volume of disease, early stage cancer, low PSA, this is a patient that might be an ideal candidate for observation. Now, a patient has to take some responsibility in that, in maintaining their follow-up appointments and accepting the uncertainty of the outcome related to a cancer diagnosis and what might happen if it's not treated. Some patients have increasing difficulty in being observed, but there are some patients that have been observed for many years and their cancer has not progressed and they've avoided treatment. By avoiding treatment, you avoid treatment-related side effects, and you put into the future the treatment of the cancer that you know about if it ends up progressing.
I want to head over to the phone lines. We have David on line one. David, welcome to Health 360.
Hi, I just had a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
My doctor used to do a digital exam plus the PSA when I started at age 50, and I'm 55 now, and 2 years ago he told me that that those tests weren't necessary anymore. And turned around, and my brother just got diagnosed with the cancer. So what would you recommend to me?
David, your question's a timely question. I think there are a couple things that are points that are made in your question. One is that you have a first-degree relative with prostate cancer, and that puts you in a higher risk group. There is certainly a bias that is out there in the primary care community that is influenced by what they're reading and being taught in their meetings, that perhaps men would be better off just allowing their disease to present as a more advanced stage cancer and deal with it at that point in life rather than being proactive and figuring out whether you have early stage prostate cancer. I would encourage you, as well as other men who are in risk groups, to be proactive and ask your doctor to examine your prostate risk factors by continuing to do a clinical exam, which is the digital rectal exam, and continuing to check the PSA. If they are uncomfortable doing that or want to, send you off to the urology specialty, we do that all the time for men just like you.
We need to take a quick break for the news here on Health 360 on WBOY, but we'll be back with more of the program in just a few moments. Questions or comments, go over to our Facebook page, Midday Matters. You can always email us at middaymatters@nipr.fm or call us 260-452-1185.
In Arizona, an effort to reduce healthcare costs.
They're constantly calling me,
How are you feeling? You know, they really care for their patients.
The program focuses on health management, not just treatment.
The care doesn't end at the home visit, which I think is a big part of how we maintain people in their home as opposed to in a nursing home.
Private insurers providing public health care, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Sean Beter with WBOI News. House Republicans are advancing a $30 billion budget that trades Governor Mike Pence's priority tax cut for more spending on roads and schools. The House Ways and Means Committee voted 16-7 Tuesday along party lines to advance the budget. Pence has dug in on his proposal to cut the state's personal income tax and continues to say this week that he is disappointed in the House GOP changes. The proposal now moves to the House, where Democrats hope to force a vote on Pence's tax cut. The House plans to spend roughly $200 million more on education than what Pence had sought. It also funnels $500 million to the state's transportation fund by no longer diverting the gas tax to the state police, Bureau of Motor Vehicles, and elsewhere. Legislators are hoping the third time's a charm when it comes to controlling the spread of synthetic drugs in Indiana. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith has more.
2013 marks the third consecutive session with legislation outlawing synthetic drugs. But Indianapolis Republican Jim Merritt, who has shepherded the effort in the Senate all 3 years, says state lawmakers and law enforcement know much more now and believe they've hit on a lasting solution. Merritt says the last 2 years, the legislature banned certain chemical compounds in the drugs, even giving the State Board of Pharmacy emergency rulemaking power to do so.
Government is not quick enough to work towards the pharmacy end where they have compounds with the Board of Pharmacy.
Legislation this year bans lookalikes, anything that's substantially similar to the banned drugs but doesn't necessarily contain anything on the state's list of banned compounds. Merritt says the lookalikes are easy to spot as they serve no purpose other than drug use. The bill also creates potentially harsher penalties for retailers who sell the drugs. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
And a legislative committee has approved a proposal to shift administration of Indiana's private school voucher program away from the new Democratic state school superintendent. The House Education Committee voted 7-4 along party lines Tuesday to endorse the bill that would move the handling of applications for the vouchers and distribution of the money to the state's Office of Management and Budget. That agency reports to Republican Governor Mike Pence. Education Committee Chairman Robert Boehning cited the involvement of school superintendent Glenda Ritz in a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of the voucher program before her election last fall. Ritz has since withdrawn from that lawsuit that's awaiting a ruling from the state Supreme Court. Committee Democrats said they believed Ritz's integrity was being questioned by the proposal. You're listening to Midday Matters Health 360 on WBOI.
Welcome back to Health 360 here on WBOY 89.1 FM. The time is 12:40. We'd love for you to join today's conversation by giving us a call at 260-452-1185. You can always post on our Facebook page, Midday Matters, or send us an email, middaymatters@nipr.fm. I'm Sarah D'Elia, joined in the studio this afternoon by Dr. Donald Urban, who's helping us facilitate a conversation today on prostate cancer, the screening process, the diagnosis, and the treatment. And of course, I have my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman.
Thank you, Sarah. Dr. Urban, the concern about mass screenings of PSA is over-treatment. But please give us the statistics on how many individuals need to be tested, how many individuals will be treated, possibly over-treated, to save a human life.
Right. This is the controversy that came out of some review of PSA test results that suggest that on the high side, there might be as many as 1,400 men need to be screened for prostate cancer with about 50 people treated to save one life. And if the numbers are looked at from a higher quality study from Europe, it may be closer to screening 900 men for an elevated PSA and treating as few as 25 to save one life. So there's quite a difference between those two extremes, and I think that most men who have prostate cancer who would know that they could die from their disease would be willing to be treated, and those who were worried about cancer would be willing certainly to be screened, and many would be willing to be treated. Some of those treated groups of men who aren't necessarily at risk of dying are at risk of developing metastatic disease. So there is value in early detection and value in early treatment of disease. And I think that this is where a urology specialist is in controversy, perhaps with the epidemiologist of the U.S. Preventive Task Force, which is advising the government really to try to decrease the cost of health care. This is the government trying to bend the spending curve and lower the cost of health care by decreasing the activity of early detection and early treatment, and essentially shifting that off into the future, maybe 10 or 20 years into the future, and letting the men develop at more advanced stages of disease. They're saying it's going to be less costly to treat advanced disease than it will be to screen, detect, and treat early disease.
We have a caller on line one. John, welcome to Health 360.
Hello.
You can go on with your question.
Oh, my question is this. At the age of 60, I had a PSA reading of 6. That went on, and had several biopsies, couldn't find anything. And finally, at the age of 72, they found that I had a little cancer in the prostate, of course. And it was a very small one, apparently. They said that it was a, it was a 5, I believe. The Gleason score was 5. And it was a type T2A. Well, that was the age of 72. So I chose not to have any treatment done at that time. They said, well, it's not going to kill you. It's too small. It's too slow growing. I'm now 82. My 10 years are up. And at 82, my PSA has suddenly decided to go to 11. And then, well, it's been bouncing around. 11 was not unusual. And it went to 13, still not unusually high. It had been there before. But then 2 months later, it was 18. So, apparently, it has decided to wake up. Now, what are my choices? I'm 82. I have, as my family doctor says, that longevity gene. My family tends to live to be in the late 90s or slightly past 100. I have no immediate relatives with prostate cancer that I know of. What do I do?
Okay. That's a very interesting history. I'm glad you called to share that with us so that we could have a good discussion about it. When you were diagnosed with prostate cancer, you had what I would call low-risk disease with a Gleason pattern 5 and a PSA less than 10. And at your advanced age, for someone age 72, the life expectancy is about 10 years. But of course, you have the longevity gene. But even with that, you opted to be observed. And I think I would choose to do that, encourage my patients to do that with similar circumstances. And now that you are 82, the PSA has more than doubled. In fact, it sounds like it's tripled in value. It still may be not necessarily all due to prostate cancer. The PSA changing could be due to benign prostate changes. And really, the only way you could figure that out would be to repeat the prostate biopsy and do some clinical correlation. When men die of prostate cancer who have never had any treatment of their disease, their PSA can be over 1,000. And when their cancer is clearly metastatic, it's usually with a PSA over 100. So at a elderly age of 82, I don't mean to be age biased there, but at age 82 with a PSA of 18, I don't think that means that you're cancer has necessarily spread beyond the prostate, but we don't know for sure. But I would say that it is your preference in terms of how you want to further evaluate that. And certainly as you're going through the last decades of your life, prostate cancer may in fact be a disease that could be life-limiting or could affect your quality of life. And so if you have no other health problems affecting your life at your age, I would think figuring out what's going on with prostate cancer would be an appropriate thing to do.
Thanks for your call. We have Rogers online, too. Rogers, welcome to Health 360.
Thank you. I have a question regarding PSA testing or screening of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 75 years old. I've been on testosterone therapy for 7 years. My maternal grandfather was the only known male in the family that had testicular cancer, and he never had anything done about it. I wasn't sure what his ultimate cause of death was, but it didn't seem to be the cancer. It's been 4 years since I had a PSA, and that was like 14 to 16 in an acceleration test. And I'm wondering if with the testosterone therapy, if that is something that would elevate the need for testing.
Sure. The my understanding is you're age 75, and your father had, it sounded to me like it was prostate cancer that was indolent. Testicular cancer is quite aggressive and usually a disease of younger men. But testosterone therapy, which is increasingly popular for aging men, does carry with it some risk. It can stimulate the growth of benign prostate, but it can also stimulate prostate cancer. And it is recommended and advised that when men are receiving testosterone therapy, that they should have active monitoring of their prostate health with the PSA blood test as well as with clinical exams, probably on an annual basis to make sure that you're not developing some problems from the testosterone therapy.
We need to take a short break here on Health 360, but we have a listener write in with a question that we'll be addressing when we come back in just a few moments. In the meantime, 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question. We have just about 10 minutes left in today's program. We'll be back here on 89.1 FM.
Am I dead?
Everything's pretty black.
Am I dead?
Same as it has been last couple of weeks.
There's a real difference here. How would I know if I was dead?
This is a mistake. My family, my daughter, I do want to live.
What happens at the very moment when you slip from life to the other side?
And what happens after? Next time on Radiolab.
Wednesday nights at 10, here on WBOI.
For this program on WBOI is provided by PHP, offering a variety of health benefits and services for individuals, families, and businesses in Northern Indiana, including medical, dental, high deductible, administrative services, and more at phpni.com. This program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Center for Middle East Peace, presenting Lebanese-American actress Lila Buck, exploring homeland, immigrant memories, and becoming American, Thursday, February 28th, Plymouth Church, 7 p.m. Details at 423-9424.
Welcome back to Health 360. The time is 12:50, and you're tuned to 89.1 FM WBOI. We have just about 10 minutes left in today's program, and we've been focusing on prostate cancer, the process of diagnosing it, the signs, symptoms, and treatment. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and joined in the studio, I have my co-host, Dr. Peter Rothman, as well as Dr. Donald Urban, who's been helping us answer your questions today. And I just kind of, before we move on with the last 10 minutes or so of our program, Dr. Urban, any final final words for the two callers that kind of had similar comments of being older and having prostate cancer?
Yeah, I think their calls point out that there's a spectrum of men that need to be aware of prostate health. It's the younger men who are completely asymptomatic and have, you know, no prostate awareness of issues at all based on symptoms. And then this older population where often there are some symptoms that are developing mid-50s, and then when you get into your 70s and 80s, almost all men have some urinary symptoms. So screening is really for men who have absolutely no symptoms. But when men are in their 70s and 80s with symptoms related to their prostate, I think it's important that they get some minimal screening to make sure that they don't have advanced stage disease. And that would include a clinical exam. The prostate with advanced stage or progression of disease might feel like the knuckle of your thumb as opposed to the soft part of your thumb, indicating the presence of cancer. And the blood test, you know, still should be in a reasonable range. I would say if you're in your 80s and you have a PSA that's in the 10 to 20 range, you're probably still okay, but you might have cancer. So that would be my comment.
And in light of this, the U.S. PSTF recommendation was to not screen men over 75 who had, quote, 10 years of life to live. But as our last few callers pointed out, they are vital. They have family history's longevity, and they wish to continue a good quality of life. They should discuss this with their physician and be aware and on top of their prostate health to prevent death, which again is the leading cause of cancer death in men over 75. Dr. Urban, the diagnosis has been made. You've scored the patient. They have cancer. What are the surgical and medical medication opportunities and therapies available?
Okay. When we counsel a patient with early stage disease, we look at the grade and the PSA and the clinical disease. The most favorable group is the low-risk group. There's an intermediate risk group and a high risk group. And for the low and intermediate risk group, which is defined by the disease burden and the PSA level, surgery is a good choice. The most aggressive high risk group, they're probably best treated with radiation combined with hormone therapy to suppress the PSA, suppress the prostate cancer activity during radiation therapy. Treatment with intent to cure is either by surgery or radiation. There are some newer choices, including cryotherapy and a treatment available outside the United States called HIFU, high intensity focused ultrasound therapy, which is currently not available in the U.S. But surgery has been the standby for more than 100 years. The first prostatectomy was performed in 1900 at Johns Hopkins. We now do prostate surgery using robotic controlled laparoscopic surgery, and it's a minimally invasive surgical procedure taking several hours. The patient stays in the hospital for one day, the one night after surgery, and for the most part, most of these patients are discharged home on the first day after surgery and then come back a week later to get their catheter out and begin normal urination after that and hope to see recovery of erectile function as time progresses based on a nerve-sparing surgical approach, which can be utilized in most patients. So the I would say that the vast majority of men having surgery today in the United States are having the robot laparoscopic, Da Vinci robot-assisted laparoscopic prostatectomy. A smaller percentage are having open surgery. Generally, more men in the younger age group have surgery compared to more men having radiation in the older age group. And the advanced stage or the high-risk cancer where the PSA is over 20 or the Gleason pattern is 8, 9, or 10 or the clinical stage is T3, these patients are treated with combined hormone ablation therapy and IMRT radiation therapy, usually with some fiducial marker placement. Another form of radiation therapy that's available at Parkview is CyberKnife radiation therapy, which will give the equivalent of 40 treatments in 5 days using a highly targeted approach, robotically controlled radiation approach, which can treat prostate cancer. It's really going to be more appropriate for the low and intermediate risk patient, where the higher risk patient is treated with the, as I said before, the IMRT, which is intensity modulated radiation therapy combined with external or combined with the hormone ablation treatment that might continue on for 2 to 3 years following completion of radiation.
And your survival rates for our patients these days?
The survival rates for the low and intermediate risk patient groups are very close, comparing surgery and radiation. For the higher risk patient group, the combined radiation hormonal therapy approach does better than surgery alone. Surgery alone has a hard time achieving complete containment of the surgical specimen, whereas radiation can treat a broader field. Those men who choose surgery as their primary treatment have the immediate gratification of getting a pathology specimen that will tell them what their extent of disease is, and within a month, their PSA should drop to an undetectable value as an indicator of cancer control. And then they have in reserve the potential for secondary treatment using radiation after surgery should they need it. We don't cure 100% of any cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer, all cancers are survivors know that they're cured of disease only once they've had long-term follow-up. And with prostate cancer, surgical patients are followed long-term with PSA testing, and a small percentage may need secondary treatment with radiation.
We have just about a minute left in today's program. Dr. Urban, I wanted to make sure if there are any phone numbers you'd like to give for support groups or how folks can get in touch with you, that we can discuss this now and maybe quickly touch upon the importance of having a support system if you are a survivor of cancer.
Yes, I think participating in a support group, one of the support leaders likes to call it a discussion group. He sort of finds maybe a negative connotation to support, but we have a monthly support group that meets the first Thursday of the month on the Parkview Regional Medical Center campus, and we have a phone number for cancer services for people to call if they're interested in the support group meeting, or if they're interested in other questions. There are some annual screening events through Parkview, 10 caps game in August. There's a PSA screening event, and there are some other information that might be available at 484-9560, 484-9560, which is Parkview Cancer Services.
Thank you so much for being a part of today's program. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1 and streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOY Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. This episode of Midday Matters will be podcasted on our website, nipr.fm. Thank you so much to all of our callers with all of your questions and comments, and we apologize if we weren't able to get to your call today. Again, the podcast available at nipr.fm. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and Fresh Air is up next.